Hi, I'm Justin Brierley, a broadcaster, author, and speaker. And for over a decade, I've been hosting conversations between Christians and atheists. And my latest project is a book called The Surprising Rebirth of Belief in God.
Justin Brierley, so good to see you. Welcome to the Stone Chapel podcast.
Thank you so much for having me on, Dave. It's great to be with you.
It's good to see you. You came into our orbit, I guess, through Mark Lanier. You had him on your podcast a number of years ago.
So. So for many years, I hosted The Unbelievable Show, which brought Christians and non-Christians together for dialogue and debate. And yes, it was probably several years ago now that Mark came to our London studio to record a discussion. He's obviously published several books on atheism, Christianity, other religions, and so on. So yeah, it was wonderful to have him on as a guest, and I'm really looking forward to joining you as well in person at the Lanier Theological Library later on in September.
Now, this will be September the 22nd, the year 2023, and your book is coming out entitled The Surprising Rebirth of Belief in God, Why New Atheism Grew Old and Secular Thinkers Are Considering Christianity Again. It's a fabulous book. Had a chance to read it the last few days, and lots of great stories in it. First of all, congratulations.
Oh, thank you very much. It's always wonderful when you finally get to hold the book in your hands, because, you know, you spend a long time working on it and then going through all the revisions. And so, yeah, I just got my own supply of books just a week ago from when we're recording. So it's great to have it.
Well, we're going to have copies available when you're here. So that's always a good thing. But it's a very interesting project. I first heard the phrase new atheism back around 2000. I was on sabbatical at the University of Edinburgh. One of the faculty members, David Ferguson, was giving a lecture there. And it was fascinating that I hadn't heard that phrase new atheism before. When did that get started exactly?
Well, a lot of people date the new atheism really to the mid-2000s, particularly as a response to 9/11. And so this was when a number of secular writers, thinkers, intellectuals, people like Richard Dawkins, Sam Harris, Daniel Dennett, Christopher Hitchens started to publish these quite strong broadsides against religion in general and Christianity in particular. So Richard Dawkins' book, The God Delusion, came out in 2006. And then you had other people like Harris and Dawkins and Dennett's and Hitchens all publishing similar types of books around the time. And these became bestsellers, really very strong kind of anti-religious, anti-theistic tomes, decrying, you know, superstition and arguing for science and reason and so on. And I think it was, as I say, partly a response to 9/11, the rise of what they saw as dangerous forms of religious extremism. But I think it was also fueled, the new atheism, by the rise of internet chat rooms, early forms of social media. It allowed lots of skeptics and sometimes people with an axe to grind against religion to get together, to mobilize. And it saw a number of in-person events come out of atheist conferences, rallies. We even had here in the UK in 2008 or 2009, the nearest thing to an advertising campaign for the new atheism, which was a bus campaign where red London buses were circulating the capital, bearing the words, "There's probably no God. Now stop worrying and enjoy your life." So it did feel like the closest thing to a really sort of orchestrated atheist movement at the time.
So is this something that was created by culture at the time, do you think, Justin? I mean, was culture just moving in this way earlier? I remember many of the churches back when I first went to Britain in the 1990s being very empty on a Sunday. It seemed more and more people were saying they had no religious affiliation at all.
Yeah, I mean, in a sense, you know, it's strange to think that the atheists felt they needed a bus campaign in the UK, because as you say, there was sort of, it wasn't exactly though lots of people were talking about God in the first place. You know, there had been an increasing secularization for generations in the UK, and the kind of church statistics were only going in one direction. So I think the new atheism was kind of almost just the cherry on top of what was an overall sort of, you know, religious decline in the West. I think the UK in some ways has only just been ahead of that curve in some ways of the US. But even now, I think you're seeing similar-ish trends in the US with the numbers of young people saying that they don't have a religion, they don't have any religious affiliation. So it was, in that sense, it was a slightly strange thing that it, in the UK, at least, that it was felt that there needed to be this strong movement against Christian faith, when in fact, you know, Christian faith had been on the decline in general for a long time anyway. But yeah, I think there were a number of factors that came together, not only those, but just, as I say, this, the birth of a movement that allowed people to feel that they could come side by side with each other on this, in this particular way.
Yeah. One of the things that you write here that got my attention early in the book is that people need a story to live by. Mm. And that's a profound statement, and I think it's absolutely true. I've been looking at these issues for a number of years from an academic perspective and looking at narrative theology and narrative criticism, those kinds of things in the biblical text. But it seems to me that what happened with the new atheism is that they took the story away that had been sort of forming and shaping Western culture for so long. They took that away and didn't replace it with anything much.
I think you're right there. And what I would say is they decided to tear God down and tell people that religion was a bad thing, but they didn't really replace it with anything positive. And the reality is people do need a positive ethic to get on with their lives. And so simply telling them, you know, well, there is science and there is reason isn't enough, because science alone won't buy you value and purpose and identity. And so I think in a funny way, the new atheism sort of paved the way for lots of other stories to potentially flood in, because in the absence of the Christian story, it's not that people just don't believe anything, don't believe it in anything. They potentially could believe in all kinds of other options, because I didn't see that many converts, as it were, from the new atheism to this very hardline materialist atheism. What you tended to see was simply people moving off in other directions and other stories coming to dominate their lives. And so I think that set the scene for the rise of, you know, multiple gender ideologies later on, and different types of identity, and people kind of investing themselves in other causes, justice causes, and so on. I think partially because they felt like, well, I need something to give me a sense of identity and a narrative to live by. And the Christian story for a long time had been that in our culture. But when people fail to have that, it wasn't just that, you know, they didn't believe in anything. They needed something to fill that God-shaped hole, in a sense, even if it wasn't ultimately the thing that would make sense of their lives.
Well, one of the things I appreciate about your book, you've been very much kind of in the center of modern culture, and you have a Twitter account, and you understand TikTok and all those kind of things. But the internet that played such an important role in the forming of this new atheism also seems to come and become an enemy of at least some of these guys. Richard Dawkins, in particular, seems to fall afoul of Me Too movements and charges of racism and sexism and those kinds of things as well.
Yeah, and I think there's a sort of twofold reasons for why the new atheism as a movement largely sputtered out after 5 or 10 years or so of it riding quite high. One was because it didn't provide that positive ethic. I don't think it ultimately gave people a reason to live for. But I think it also had all these inherent sort of contradictions and reasons why it unraveled. One of which was, as you say, the fact that some of the new atheists found themselves getting sort of cancelled or coming under scrutiny themselves. It had a sort of a Me Too moment almost early on, actually, the new atheism. In about 2011, there was this moment that came to be dubbed Elevatorgate, when at one particular atheist conference in Dublin, a female atheist vlogger called Rebecca Watson, who had been speaking on some of the problems inherent in the atheist culture of misogyny and sexism and so on, was propositioned in an elevator late at night by one of the guests of this conference. And she went on to explain on her vlog how this was just symptomatic of some of the problems in atheism. Well, that might have been the end of it, except that Richard Dawkins, you know, one of the sort of architects of the atheist movement, then commented on this in a blog post called Dear Muslima. It was a highly sarcastic, sardonic response to Rebecca Watson complaining about this, in which he, you know, put on the voice of someone who was being oppressed in a Muslim country and said, but, you know, forget about all the trials I have to endure. Think of our poor American sisters being asked for coffee in an elevator. And so this simply sort of poured gasoline onto this whole debate. And it quickly, that really for me was a pivotal moment where the movement kind of split in two directions. Those who wanted it to be so-called atheism plus. So not only do we believe in atheism, but we also believe in lots of other things, included, you know, social justice movements, feminism, LGBT rights, and so on. And others who just wanted, you know, just pure free thinking and science and reason, and felt everything else was just a sort of politically correct ideologies and even a sort of form of religion in itself. So this was, I think, the starting point of the movement really starting to unravel, to the point where some of these atheist speakers were no longer willing to share a stage with each other. They had fallen out with each other so dramatically. So it was an interesting to watch, as it were, from the sidelines, some of that cultural stuff going on, where the new atheism itself sort of started to be unraveled by the direction the culture was going.
Well, you've had a number of these atheists on your radio show to dialogue with Christians. And some of the people I know who responded to them included people like Alistair McGrath and William Lane Craig and N.T. Wright, who've all been here at the Lanier Theological Library. You're a Christian in all of this, but you've heard all of these arguments and you've weighed it all out, and you're still a believing Christian, having heard that.
Yeah. And this was really the subject of my first book, actually, which came out about 5 or 6 years ago. And that was titled Unbelievable: Why, After 10 Years of Talking with Atheists, I'm Still a Christian. And it was interesting because, having had some of these heavyweights on both sides of the Christian and atheist aisle come on my show to debate things, I certainly, you know, there were plenty of things that I still found it difficult to answer or that were mysterious. But what it really gave me in that time was a new appreciation for just how intellectually robust the Christian faith is, because really it still feels to me, and always has, as the most compelling explanation of reality, partly because I was able to put it next to other interpretations of reality, like atheist naturalism. Mm. And I just found there were so many things that worldview does not answer, just doesn't speak to, in the way that the Christian view of reality speaks to. So it's not that I have some overwhelming proof for Christianity that, you know, could demolish any atheist. But mm-hmm. when I look at both views, atheist naturalism and Christianity, I just find that Christianity provides a very compelling vision of reality and answers far more questions than the atheist perspective does. So that's been the way I've approached things, is myself as an apologist, not to try and claim that Christianity answers every single question, but to say that actually it provides the best overall vision of reality that I've ever come across. And I continue to find it very compelling.
I'm reading for the second time right now a book by Tom Holland called Dominion. Mm. And you mentioned Tom Holland and Jordan Peterson in particular in your book, about individuals who are secular thinkers and yet are making a case that the Christian story, the Christian explanation of reality, has had such an important shaping function for us. They themselves, I don't guess, are believers, but they still find value in what the Christian faith has brought to the West. And you really can't envision the West without it, in a sense,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely. And what I was noticing as I went on hosting shows was that, whereas we started the Unbelievable show with a lot of these bombastic debates between the new atheists and the Christian thinkers, increasingly in the last several years, I found that those were being replaced by these much more nuanced conversations between people, as you've mentioned, like Jordan Peterson and Tom Holland, Douglas Murray, people who are themselves not necessarily Christian believers, but who are not nearly as dismissive of Christianity as the new atheists were, who actually see the value of the Christian worldview, find themselves sometimes quite drawn to it themselves, but they haven't necessarily taken that full step into it. And so I was just fascinated to see the way in which the conversations were changing in the culture. And I saw that a lot of the audience that had been drawn to the new atheists were now turning up for the lectures of, you know, Jordan Peterson, and watching their YouTube videos. And they were asking very different questions and offering very different answers to the new atheists. And particularly Tom Holland, who you mentioned, whose book Dominion is just an extraordinary look at the way our moral instincts in the West really were generated by the Christian Revolution. He came on my show several times for fascinating conversations, both with atheists like A.C. Grayling and Christians like N.T. Wright. And it was just remarkable to see the way in which he absolutely recognized that, even though he wasn't a believer himself, everything he valued as a thinking, cultural person, you know, human rights, equality, dignity, freedom, he said, I can't deny that you know, as a historian, that these come from the Christian worldview rather than from science or reason or the Enlightenment. So it's been a real sea change, I think, in the kind of openness that there is in the intellectual community to taking Christianity seriously. And for me, that was significant enough to kind of write a book on it.
Yeah. One of the images, I guess the metaphors of your book, is about the tide going out and the tide coming back in. You're fairly optimistic. You think the tide is coming back in.
I do. I start the introduction, actually, with a quote from a well-known poem by the Victorian poet Matthew Arnold. And it's been used many times by others as a metaphor, but I'll just quote the particular stanza here. "The sea of faith was once too at the full and round earth's shore, lay like the folds of a bright girdle furled, but now I only hear its melancholy, long withdrawing roar." And that image from Dover Beach has sort of represented the way in which the tide of faith has sort of gone out in the 150 years since he wrote those words, because of technology, science, Enlightenment thinking, and so on. But it was actually a conversation I was hosting between the secular thinker Douglas Murray and N.T. Wright, where I suddenly thought, well, this might not be the end of the story, because what Douglas Murray said, he quoted the same line, and he said, well, the thing about the sea of faith, Justin, is it could come back in again. That is the point of tides. And I thought, you know, I'd never thought of that. Yes, it could. And interestingly, he was saying this, Douglas Murray, in the context of seeing some of his friends and peers converting to Christianity, quite unlikely converts
really?
To faith.
Interesting.
And I thought, well, you know what? I've seen some rather unusual, interesting converts to Christianity, people you wouldn't expect necessarily to have made that journey. And I was seeing people like Douglas Murray, another of these secular intellectuals, but who seemed to have completely jettisoned the new atheist approach. He was very much, you know, a friend and colleague of Hitchens and co. Mm-hmm. at one time. But even he was saying in that discussion, look, the new atheists completely failed to give us a workable ethic. And he himself was saying, I've come to recognize that the reason I believe the things I believe is because of Christianity, even though I can't subscribe to its sort of doctrines. And I just thought, you know, there's something going on here. And so that was really where the book began for me.
Well, it's a brilliant book, and you're going to be with us September the 22nd in 2023 to do a lecture here, and you'll have copies of your book there, and it comes out in September as well, that same month.
That's right, yeah. So if you're looking for it online, it's The Surprising Rebirth of Belief in God. I think the subtitle, I'm a fan of long subtitles, kind of captures the kind of thesis of the
book. It is the thesis of a statement of the book, isn't it?
Yeah, Why New Atheism Grew Old and Secular Thinkers Are Considering Christianity Again. So that's sort of, you know, what I'll be talking on when I come to the library. There's a lot of people these days, understandably somewhat cynical or jaded almost about the church and Christianity, and asking really, where are we going? But I'm an optimist at heart, and I just think sometimes some things have to die off before they're reborn. And I wonder whether we're seeing something rather interesting happening, the turning of that tide, as it were, in our culture. And yes, things may get worse before they get better. But at the same time, people need a story to live by. And if the stories they're currently telling themselves aren't working out, if they're running out of steam, and I think in particular, the atheist materialist story really is running out of steam. And I detail that in several ways during the book. I think there is room for that Christian story, which I think is still flowing, is still under the surface, is still basically inherent in many of the assumptions we have as Western people. I think it's still there, and it could come back again, even within our generation. So that's my optimistic thesis in the book.
Well, with you, I am optimistic, and I'm grateful for the opportunity to talk about your book, and will be even more grateful for a chance for a lot of people to get it and begin to absorb it and think it through and such. Justin, thanks for being with us today on The Stone Chapel.
It's been an absolute pleasure to be with you. Thank you.
Hold the phone for a nugget of wisdom from our guest coming up in just a moment. Thanks to Kathy Capes for her expertise in bringing this podcast to you. Thanks to Phil Keggy for our music. If you enjoy the Stone Chapel podcast, why not stop what you're doing right now and subscribe? Share it with your friends on social media, especially those interested in theology. Come on, you know you want to. Once you do that, it keeps these winsome words coming your way, and helps rank us higher on every search engine. If you have questions, comments, or you just want to be in touch, email us at podcast@lanierlibrary.org. That's podcast@lanierlibrary.org. Lanier is spelled L-A-N-I-E-R. Now, until next time, thanks for listening.
I love this quote from Blaise Pascal, who was a Christian thinker and mathematician. He said, "Make religion attractive, make good men wish it were true, and then show them that it is." And I think that's our job as apologists and evangelists today, is not simply to show them that Christianity is true, but to make them wish it were true, just as C.S. Lewis once did with his Narnia stories. He made people wish for a world that could be true, and then he said, "What if it is true?" I think that's our job today as well.